Going to go back to Revelation 10 and 7. We're still staying in there with that for a little while till we can get over a few more thoughts. The last service we had, I talked to you just a little bit about some things. I introduced a thought or two that I thought maybe might enlarge it on tonight if it was possible. As if we can get the right hunger or the atmosphere, whatever. I went home the other night and I was talking to my wife. And I said, Betty, I'm just alarmed over the people, which I've done this a number of times as of late. I said, they're so reverent, so wonderful. They greet me, and they reverence. I said, but when I want to get into the deeper things of God, I can't seem to make contact with them. And I said, then we have to revert back to a different level of teaching. And the Lord speaks to us and says to desire the sincere milk of the word that you might grow thereby. And so he speaks to us. And occasionally he brings in some revelation. But the Bible speaks of meat being in the house of God and the meat being for the strong. They who have by reasoning exercise their senses to be able to discern between good and evil. And it appears that there's not enough exercising of the senses. Like somebody was talking today, said that the wife was asking about some things. And one or two of them, I hear them say, I don't know how to answer the wife because I don't know how to explain it. I said, well, there really isn't any way to explain it. There isn't any way to listen to this and go out and tell others about it. There isn't any way to do that. As to your normal, natural procedures of life, you can't do that. If you picked up anything at all in your natural frame of mind as to intellect, it would only help to prove that you're just a reflector. And if you related it to somebody, that's all you'd be doing is just relating to them something that you had reflected through your intellect. Because that is not what this is all about. You have to conceive of this in your spirit. And then a Christ is born within you, and Jesus, the Son of the bosom of Almighty God, the Bible said he hath declared the Father. The Father is not seen through natural eyes. He is a great light into which no man can approach, whom no man has seen nor can see. And Jesus Christ alone dwelling within that light is to the bosom of the Father. He hath declared the Father. So the Father is a revelation, that is, he's made known to you by revealing to the eyes of your understanding. You comprehend the heights, the depths, the width, and the length of this wonderful thing. And there's no way that you can, through a memory, relate this to people. But when you conceive of this thing, and then this begins to mature on the inside of you, you find an inspiration that when people are hungry, desirous of God, and when there is a need, and they begin to communicate with you that something that even you don't have any control over begins to emanate from you, and it begins to express itself in such great clarity and simplicity and such accuracy that even you yourself will be amazed. Whereas otherwise you will stumble and stagger and try to figure something out. It's like I told my wife, I said, Betty, I'm just not good at figuring nothing out. I'm just not very good at that. I learned this a long time ago. And I said, I just decided the only way that I could survive in life and get the job done was to submit myself totally unto God. And with this, I find it is so simple and so easy to understand all things as he explains them to me. But otherwise, it's just a struggle. Try to piece together and put together and figure something out and decide whether it's right or wrong or whether a person is right or wrong. Or, you know, And again, as I said to some of them working down in the printing room, I said, you know, the problem with the women and the men that work at Bethlehem are the ones that occupy office for world evangelism. I said, they're trying to do this thing within their own strength. And they're trying to have a perseverance toward this that is not rewarding at all. I said, you can't do that. The Bible said it's not by power or by might, but it's by my spirit, saith the Lord. I said, when you get filled with the spirit and you seek the Lord and you hunger and thirst after the things of the Lord, you will be filled. I said, and then that superior, super strength of God will talk with you, cause you to lose all interest in the world. It will pull at you, as the Bible said, it driveth Jesus into the wilderness, led up of the Spirit. It will cause you to want to do something for God, to want to think on God, to want to talk about God, and you'll want to be active in the things of God all the time. Otherwise, there is another spirit, a satanic power that's great and mighty, much greater than you are as a natural person. And if you don't have the Spirit of Christ, then this spirit that I'm speaking of as to the satanic spirit, it will pull at you and tug at you, and your desire within your heart will be to the world. And your ambition and strength will be utilized toward an effort and endeavor of things that are in the world. And you'll never really have a vision for God, and you'll perish. So then this is something that God does within you. And the whole thing orbits around the word as to the weak being strong in the power of my might and of having his spirit, that it might create within you a new life, a new spirit, a new desire, a new hunger, a new thirst, a new inspiration, life in abundance, filled up and overflowing, a zeal for God like you've never dreamed of, a light that doesn't dim and doesn't go out. So then in this, we realize that our error is within our own selves. And it's certainly not of God, for God has not given us the spirit of error. So we find that we don't have anything revealed to us. We just go on day after day. Whereas I might say this, I guess, before I read here. Anyway, I'm just going to make a reference to Revelation 10 and 7 here. For in the days of the voice of the seventh angel, when he begins to sound, the mysteries of God should be finished as he has declared unto his servants the prophets. This you are real familiar with anyway, but I just refer back to it because it does have to do with where the angel declared time to be anymore. And this is the thing that I want to kind of work around for a number of services. But anyway, let me say this. In being disturbed the other night about the people, I went home and I said, Betty, I know that the mysteries of God are being finished. And in the days of the voice of the seventh trumpet, then the mysteries of God were to be finished, for the things of God do have an end. And when you say trumpets, you know, to us a piece of metal forms a trumpet. Or to the Jews it was a shofar, or a ram horn, which I have one of them laying up on Betty's little whatnot cabinet down there that they bought and gave me. They got it from Israel. And of course up there's a little thing of the seven candlesticks. Well, I was telling Betty there at the supper table after church Wednesday night, and I said, I'm really disturbed about my people, Betty. I told her, I said, I know the end of the world is here, and the end of time is here. And I know that the people need to get ready. I expressed in the last service how that people in the world accept an indoctrination as to the tutoring of colleges and schools and whatever. And they're right ready to accept that as to a program for their minds that they might be aggressive toward natural things and excel in the world. But when you try to bring the same principles, and that's only symbolic, you try to bring the same principles as to an indoctrination of another world, they can't get a hold of it to the spiritual side of it. They do get a hold of it, as to the scientific side of it. And one of the reasons for that is because the children, naturally speaking, as to the children of the world, they thrive off of the benefits of fathers of science. And fathers of science give their minds to thought and understanding, to research. And then as a result of that, natural things come out from them or form because of their understanding. And things mature and they come together. Machinery, lights, the electronic world, your movies, and all the things that thrill the human senses. So they follow after that. And they do not see far enough to realize that all of those things come from a tree of knowledge. That knowledge is responsible for those things. And that the act of creation comes through an act of knowledge. And that when you come to the spiritual things of God, then you have to realize that this world is but a shell. And all things form within the mold. And that we're almost at the breaking of the mold. The child forms within the womb, and then when the matrix opens, the child is presented. But he's not seen until that time. And within the mold of the body of Jesus, God is a great spirit, poured himself out in his fullness. And at the time of the rent veil of Calvary, then God stepped out as the great Holy Ghost, as the great holy personification. I said that to say this, I've reminded you of this so many times, that God, who is a great light, that the heavens of heavens cannot contain him, that you do not know anything about him as a human being. You've never seen him, you cannot see him, you will never see him as a human being. And this great God, like the potentials of the earth as to ores of gold or silver, or metallics are taken out, melted down, the dross is moved, and then poured into a mold to come out as an automobile or some precious whatever it would be to you, so is God in a human form. And God was made flesh. God was made flesh. God took on the form of a servant or a human being, inasmuch as the children were partakers, so he partook of the same. And so then God was made a human being. And God was made flesh. And this is what it's all about. Jesus said, "And for what good work do you stone me? For a good work we stone you not." Then it was said, "Why do you stone me?" Said, "You being a man, make yourself God." You being a man, make yourself God. Isn't that what it's all about? Is God making himself a man? Did the man make himself God, or did God make himself man? And the Bible said the Word, God, the great spirit, the light, was made flesh. So it wasn't a matter of Jesus making himself God. It was God making himself Jesus. God who has no form. God who cannot be seen, cannot be touched, cannot be felt, cannot be heard, except through human instrumentality. God made himself a human body. And he seeks to make you a member of that human body, of that God family. Because man is part of the Godhead. And a part of the Godhead is man. A part of the Godhead is man. And the thing that was lost in the garden was a part of the Godhead. And that part was lost was man. For man was made in the image of God to be part of the Godhead. And that's why it says that Jesus is the fullness of the Godhead bodily. And we are members in particular. He is the first brother of many brethren. And we are members in particular. And we that die out to the flesh, we're baptized into Christ and we put on Christ. So then we understand that our problem was because we didn't understand. And though we don't know anything, yet there's one thing we do know. And that is that he is right, that God is right in what he says and what he does, and that there is a God. So I said all that then again to make reference to something here. If that invisible world requires a mold of the present day world, or of these things that are vanity, all is vanity and vexation of the spirit, Solomon said. All is the lust of the flesh, the pride of life, it'll pass away. All that's of the world, all that's in the world, all of the world, it'll pass away. Now, if it is a mold, then we understand what God is doing. And we understand that as a human being, we cannot understand God. We cannot know God. We cannot find God unless God makes himself a human being. And of course, that's what he did through Jesus. Now then, our little old finite minds, we know God. We comprehend God. We see God even in our understanding. And we know that God one time walked the earth. The Bible said, and in the beginning was the Word. The Word was made flesh. He walked among us, and we beheld him as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. And the Bible said this great light shined in the midst of this intellectual darkness, and the darkness could not comprehend it, for the wicked shall not see when good cometh. And so then we know that he was in the world, the Bible tells us, and the world was made by him. Who was in the world? Jesus. God. The fullness of God in Jesus. God was in the world, and the world was made by him, but the world knew him not. So we understand then that God became a man. And the second man, Adam, was made a quickening spirit. So then God desires to make you a quickening spirit, to make you God, for you're gods. Jesus said, you're gods. Why do you get upset with me because I say I am the Son of God? It's not the scriptures say that Adam was the Son of God. Why then do you get upset with me? You know, aren't we gods? You're gods. Wasn't it said that in the beginning God said, let there be, and there was? And then here we find ourselves in the position to where God speaks to us. And he says to you, to me, he says, you say, let there be, and it shall be. Say what you will, and it shall be. Why? Because that's what God does. He says what he wants to say. And the Bible said we understand that the world came into existence. All things were formed, framed, emanated from God by the word through faith. And that when we speak the word through faith, all these things happen to us. He raised the dead. He said, greater things than these shall ye do. Though he could have said, I'm God in the fullness. I am God who created heaven and earth. I'm walking the earth in your midst, and I'm resurrecting the dead. I'm doing these things. But greater things than these shall ye do. Now, how could we ever do greater things than Jesus did? Because Jesus was limited because of their unbelief, even in the wilderness. And Jesus was limited as to a certain season, time, and age, as to fulfillment, X amount of years, and then he had to die. But when God comes into you and I, and we being eternal, and it is Christ on the inside of us living, and not us, the Bible said he's able to do abundantly above all that we can ask or think by his Spirit that worketh within us, then he can do much, much more, much greater than he did by being here in this world, even with all the things that he did. So then ye shall do greater things than these. For we have an eternal regime with God, an everlasting regime, life eternal, for God to work through and do great and mighty things. So then I said all that to say this, just to kind of stir up your pure mind tonight, to make you to realize that the whole project of God, the whole drive and thrust of God, is to project himself through the human being, and he says unto you and I, as to whatever measure you will allow, here is your example, the Lord Jesus Christ. Follow in his steps. Go on to the full measure that you may have the full reward. But if you want children 30-fold, 60-fold, 100-fold, whatever you want to do, he that overcometh can sit down in the throne with me and eat of the hidden manna. Be therefore perfect, even as thy Father in heaven is perfect. Surrender that body to this virtue of God that is so powerful that it went out from the body of Jesus, healing all that got near it. And that virtue is for the body. It is for the body. The spirit is for your spirit. The life is for your spirit. But the virtue is for your body. Now, I've done that as to the work of life. You surrender your body and give your body wholly a complete surrender as to a complete sacrifice that you may have the desires of your heart right upon the high places of the earth. Say what you will. Be one with God. Sit down in the throne with me with a rod of iron. Break the nations as pottery. Well, anyway, we could go on and go on. The days of the mold is almost finished, and the masterpiece is almost ready to be revealed. And we, like children, have stumbled and staggered along trying to understand. But after a while, he's going to open it up. And it's all going to be celestial, like a crystal city, like a crystal body, like a crystal river. It'll be so beautiful and so glorious and yet so buoyant. It's just inexpressible. It's so masterful. Paul, being caught up, saw these things and said, the things of the world are nothing but beggarly elements. So then we know that something ahead is real good. I have not seen, ear hath not heard, neither hath it entered into the heart of man at any time the things that God hath prepared for them that love him. But God hath revealed these unto us by Spirit, or made him revelation unto babes such as are willing to learn. So with all the glitter and the glamour of the world, we realize it's really nothing. Now, having said these few little things to catch your attention, I want to go back again now and say, in the beginning, remember, in the beginning, and the Bible said, in the beginning was God. In the beginning was God. Now think about that in connection with this. He was in the world, and the world knew him not. And the Bible says, and Jesus Christ was the beginning of the creation of God. And in the beginning was God. And so he walked among us. God walked among us. In the beginning was God. And then consider, even as my wife said, she said, you know, it says it is finished. In the middle of the week, it says it is finished. I said, yes, that's right, Betty. That's what I was wanting to talk about. She said, but that's what Jesus said at Calvary. I said, I know. That's what we want to talk about, is that it is one and the same. And when the great angel placed one foot on the land, one foot on the sea, lifted up his hand to heaven and swore by him that liveth forever and ever that time should be no more, that was Calvary. That's why Peter said, and in the fullness of time, or that is, he spoke like this, saying, yeah, the people upon whom the ends of the world have come. Now, let's just take this step by step. In the beginning, I say again, in the beginning, what is the beginning of the world, of the act of creation? In the beginning, not the beginning of God. God was here. He's always been here. There's no such thing as beginning with God. I try to express this to you. No such thing as ending with God. Even the Bible says that Jesus was made a high priest after the order of Melchizedek. Without father, without mother, without beginning, without end. Without ending of days or beginning of years. So then, in the beginning, and I try to impress upon you that when we say this, that we who observe times, Paul said you observe times and seasons. I am afraid of you, he told the Jews. See, he knew that they were taught to do that. But it was supposed to be a mold of the mind. It was supposed to be a symbolic. It was supposed to be a shadow of that which was to come. And that when the mole was done away with as to the shale, it was gone. Then the little chick was there. Or that is to say, if God is the invisible and he done away with the mole and he's still the invisible God, he is now the personified invisible. When I say personified, we say personification as to look and behold, as to a mold, as to a body. But not so with us, because we have known him after the flesh. But from henceforth we know him no more after the flesh, as to a human personification, as to flesh. But we know him in our minds because we've comprehended a personification of God. And now we know God and we understand God and we know what he looks like. So we now can comprehend God. We know how to worship God. Before that, they knew not how to worship God because there was no object of worship. The word being God, meaning object of worship. There was no such thing. There was no mental picture of him. There was no intellectual comprehension of God. See, but now we do know. He is the great eternal Holy Spirit. He is alive. He is resurrected from the dead. He is above you, in you, and through you. He is in you by measures or whatever you allow. And he is in your midst, always speaking to you. Well, anyway, let's go back now and take a look at it here. So Jesus has declared it. And we know that in the beginning then, it is the beginning of the era of time. So if in the beginning, we know that that is the beginning as to shadows, I say once again to you that God came forth. God the great light. He looked and darkness was upon the face of the deep. Now, it would take a long time to go into these things. And I know that I can't have your attention for a long time. So I have to try to condense this. And it makes it real difficult because there's certain things that you need to know. And by the time I take up the preliminary part of this, then I get the other. I always find myself not having the time to be able to talk with you. But let's take a quick rundown. Now, the question arises like this. Bible said the Spirit of God searcheth out the things of God, yea, the deep things. Where did this darkness come from? If God is light, and God filleth all in all, even from everlasting to everlasting. And there is no corners and there's no nooks. As to the way we would term it with our little intellectual mind of measurements and boundaries. If there is no such thing with God, where then did darkness come from? It came to be like this. That God actually created a being that was a reflector, a thing that was to reflect light. And when this thing reflected light, it was called Lucifer, the son of the morning. In that God is the light, he was called the son of the morning. Now connect that with Adam. Wasn't Adam the son of the morning? The figure of him to come. Didn't Adam reflect the great light of God? As a person would take a camera and take a picture and it would flash on the image and then the lights go. And then the negative comes forth to be processed to the dark age. We say as to the fall from the garden all the way down to Calvary and then the rent veil. And all of a sudden the blood's gone, the little red light, the mixture of the spirits as to whatever, as to the developing. And then we come out with a positive. So we know that Adam failed to the dimension or place of a negative. Though he was made out of the dust, picked up from that and put in the garden, he was no more than an animal. But when he was put into the garden, the reflection of God as to seeing God, being made in God's own image, as to the Shekinah image of Christ, he became that beautiful personification of God, as to the God body. And the only body of God. But it was a reflection of God as to a God body. It was an illumination of the Shekinah. The same thing that happened to Mary when the Spirit came upon Mary. And it says, and the Spirit of the Most High shall overshadow thee. And with this illumination, it inspired Mary so greatly. There was a divine conception as to the holy thing called Jesus. So then we know But when God saw the darkness, there was a reason for it. And we see Adam illuminated with this light, as to his mind in all brilliance lit up to see spiritual things like the tree of knowledge. There's no such thing as a tree of knowledge that grows out of the ground. There was the tree of life. There's no such thing as a tree of life growing out of the ground. And then there was God, who is the eternal spirit. And yet they communicated with him. They related to him. They had fellowship with him. See, but as quick as they sinned, their eyes were darkened. The veil that was over Paul's eyes, it came down. The intellectual veil. Even Satan, a spirit, a great mighty angel, a reflector, who had reflected God like a mirror as to the sun. This great angel that had reflected God, being lifted up, being great, the sun of the morning, being that brightness that a third part of heaven got so carried away with that they failed. As to that world that was before this one, as to the angelic world. And there, in the reflection, this great light was so mighty, he was so brilliant, he was so bright, he was so great, so powerful, even as of today, through that great light as just a reflection, he hath created himself a world. Through that light as to this intellectual tree of knowledge and indoctrination as to the glitter and the glamour of this world of vanity, which is Satan's heaven, as to the blood being on the seat of atonement and the grace, blood, one rim like fire in the light of this coming, he has set himself up a heaven. He has a heaven, and this thing is a heaven. And everybody is under grace by the blood of Jesus. Satan taking the full advantage as to what the Bible said in the book of Revelation. And there came an angel down from heaven. And the glory of this angel was so great, it lightened all the earth. And so this thing of Satan was so great, it actually created a world. A world of splendor and magnificence, of glitter and glamour, of diamonds and pearls and rubies, and even the human form. Now, that's nothing but vanity. That's nothing but a reflection. It's nothing but a shadow of that which is to come. And Paul, coming into the revelation for the Gentile bride with the mind of Christ, he said, all of the invisible things from the beginning of the foundation of the world, that is all of the invisible world. Every bit of this, he said, is understood by the allegorics as to the shadows and the type, or that is of this world. All of that which is to come is understood by this world, because Satan had reflected God in his entirety. And so when he felt lifted up, great and mighty, and he said, I shall be like the Most High. I'll exalt myself beyond the stars, or I will set my throne above the stars. The very time that this thing that so gripped him in the sense of his own prestige, being a liar and the father of a lie, even telling Adam and Eve a lie. See, being the origin of iniquity as to such greatness until it swelled up as to him wanting to magnify himself above God, and the angels praising and magnifying him. And the very minute or time as to the second, the Bible teaches that this came to him, that this came into him, that this thing emanated from him. The very minute that it happened, the light went out, because God can't look upon iniquity. And so when the light withdrew, there he was, a reflector. He was now a creature of darkness. Darkness is a term that we use. Someone would say light and darkness. That's our terminology as to light and darkness, because, as I say, that's our means and measurement as to oral expression. And there's no other way for human beings to exist, to maintain a status of stability in life, except through these principles and governing principles of life. So then there it was. Darkness, the origin of darkness. God had withdrawn. So then he thus became the ruler of the darkness. And darkness then is intellectual reasoning. Paul turned my people from darkness unto light. Paul had got the revelation and seen beyond the veil. And he said, turn my people from darkness unto light. The scales are gone from your eyes, Paul. Turn my people from darkness unto light. And turn them unto the faith which is in me. The faith by which they are sanctified. Now, see, when I get to these things, as I say, I have to do a lot of differentiating as to pinpoint and as to detail, or else you don't really retain it. You really don't understand it. It's like my companion when she's putting together a puzzle. Like she just put a puzzle together about 2,000 pieces, and when she got right to the end of it, right in the middle of it, she had one missing the children had gotten. See, that would really disturb me. But I don't know whether it did her or not. She's put so many together. I have to detail things like the faith. The faith. See, we get mixed up. We get bogged down on those things. Because through the past years, preachers have preached, you know, in such a fashion that they've not detailed and brought the things as to the governing principles of the gospel or revelated the deep mysteries of God to make man to understand. Why haven't they done that? Because God did not want the church to have these things as an ultimatum until the end time. Because if they'd have had it, it would have been like Enoch. Enoch was translated. And like Paul, caught up into the third heaven. And God had to let death fall upon Paul as to something happening to him. Because he was caught up into the third heaven. And like John, caught up into the heavens. And as it was with Moses, as it was with Elijah. See, these things make you into what you are. And it is in the last day, as to the 6,000 years a day, as a thousand years with God, 1,000 years a day, that God made man in the sixth day. And he's just now making man as to the God-man, Adam, who was the figure of him to come. This man that he's making now is the very him that did come. So then we know that Satan became the ruler of the darkness. And when we think of this darkness, we think of the intellectual. Paul, so brilliant, the intellectual. And then God giving him light and him being the overseer to the Gentile church, having the revelation to bring a bride, because the bride has to be a revelation bride. It has to be a revelation body, a revelation mind. Everything has to be spiritual because the Jews were only symbolic as to the mold as with the rest of the world. So they inherit the world. And this is why that we bring it out as to the angel in the days of Daniel when everything had fallen down into the Babylon. It would take a long time to detail as to the dates and these things where we bring out these things fragmentally speaking in past sermons on tape leading up to this time. See, Daniel didn't know what was going to befall his people, the Jews. He knew it was said of the prophet that they'll go down into Babylon. And of course that was contested by the false prophet. But said they'll go down there and be there 70 years. Well, he went down there as a boy. Now 70 years has expired. And now he wonders what's going to happen to the Jews. And we bring it out about Nehemiah and the building back of the walls. And the days of King Artaxerxes and a number of things. But see, the angel said 490 years. Or days is determined upon thy people. And he found out that is to a year, to a day. And this kind of thing. See, when Daniel saw that, he did not see the church. He did not see the church ages. He did not see anything from Calvary over to the last week of Daniel, as we say. Because Daniel was one that saw the prophetical utterance as to a vision. See, so in between there, as the 7 years being taken away from the 490, leaving 483 years to stop at Calvary, then this seven went way over here to the end time. So you got 7 years, you got 483 years, and that is all that there is to the world. Just 490 years, Daniel. That's all of the world. There ain't going to be no more of it. That's all of the world. There's just 490 years as to the earthly perspective, and that's all he saw. He did not know there was a dividing asunder to allow a great period of almost 2,000 years in there for the church. He didn't know that. He didn't see that. And when Peter opened the door as to the rent veil, looking beyond the veil of Jesus, a human being, the servant form, and saw Christ opening that door, he did not know that he was severing seven from 490 to open a door for the church ages. That was a door that was open in heaven, that Jesus said, I am the door. And that the rent veil of Calvary that was now showing through Peter looking beyond the veil, he did not know that Jesus was the door to all eternity. Said, if I be lifted up, I'll draw all men unto me. He didn't know that. He didn't know that he was taking seven from 490 and going to leave 483 with the Jew as to a perspective over here, earthly perspective, and put seven way over here as to another earthly perspective, and that anything in between there was an open door in heaven, and now the world as we know it was a heavenly thing, and that Jesus dying at Calvary and giving his blood, that all of a sudden grace was going to cover the whole world, and that was going to be heaven. And it was going to create a second heaven. A second heaven where the woman would be there, like according to Revelation, when John saw it, when it was revealed, as he revealed these things to his holy prophets and apostles. There he saw it. When he looked and saw the war in heaven, he couldn't understand that. What is war doing in heaven? But see, there is war in heaven. Even among the saints, there is a battle, continual battle. And look at all the bloodshed everywhere. And it's a battle, it's a continual battle. And it's a battle between the right and the good. Even Christians are battling continually and spilling blood around the world. It's a Muslim thing. It's a Catholic thing. There was war in heaven. It was because of Lucifer. So when John looked and saw this thing and the woman in travail with her child, it was in the second heaven. And when the child was born, up went the child. Where did he go? It was already in heaven because he said, I saw this great wonder in heaven. And Lucifer was seen in heaven. So then he is in heaven. Or how else could John have seen him in heaven? How is he in heaven? Because he lives within the human body as a personification, just like Christ did in the body of Jesus. And there's going to be a battle as to a battle royal when the blood will run up the horse's bridle. When Jesus returns on the white horse and his people return to redeem their body, they'll return with it. So we know then that when the child was caught up as to the birth, the woman went into a wilderness. The battle was in heaven. Michael and the angels fought. Satan and his angels fought. And suddenly there was no place found within heaven anymore. And Lucifer was cast out into the earth. Out he went, Adam, out of the garden, out of paradise. Jesus, the Mount of Transfiguration, out of the glory of God. Why hast thou forsaken me? But where did the child go? It went up into the third heaven. The child went up into the third heaven. The thing that's going on in the second heaven right now is a battle royal here at the end time. And this thing is taking place right when the church is heavy with child. Paul said, I travail to Christ before within you. We're already heavy with child, and we're carrying the child because the body is the mold. It's the feminine part. A woman is only symbolic. There's no such thing as male and female with God as in the spirit. This is just symbolic. So then we know that there's a battle royal. And we know that the child is at the point of birth. And with this, as the child comes forth, then Satan, Lucifer, the red dragon, which means the human body of a generation of vipers, of an intellectual concept of God, which hath created a world of the intellectual infatuations of life, which is but lying vanities, that this red dragon, which is a blood life, he's called the red dragon because he is a blood life, a fallen blood life by human relationship, and so comes forth his subjects. And in this, we know that Satan was laying there to devour the child. Now, the child is not a human blood life. It's not that at all. The second man, Adam, was made a quickening spirit. So then the blood life is waiting to devour that child that is a true child of the church, which is to be made a quickening spirit, or through his birth is made a quickening spirit, his new birth, and is waiting to devour it. How can it devour it? By its intellectual seizures of lies, as it did with Adam and Eve when it said, thou shalt not surely die. By the perversion of these perverted thoughts and expressing itself to the extent that man is deceived. Whereas the Bible said, let no man deceive you. And that from the simplicity of Christ, which is the gospel. So we know then that through their intellect, they say ball games is all right. Pool halls is all right. Look for your place in the world. Seek a position in the upper echelon. Be something in the world. Get you an intellectual diploma. Have plenty of money. Get you prestige and have the polished ethics of life. Be a president, be a governor, be a scholar, be a great entertainer. Be something in the world. Be something in the world. And so then as to devour the child, and there it is. But nevertheless, in the midst of all of this, as to the religious attire today, the child is still being caught up into the third heaven. And that old intellectual mind can't get it. No matter what it does as to the supremacy of the tree of knowledge and the ability of Lucifer, he can't get that child. That child is being caught up into the mind of Christ, the third mind, even that brings forth this wonderful world, this invisible world that causes the shadows to pass away as this great world of light approaches. You as that child being caught up, Lucifer goes out. And with this great brightness of the day star dawning within your heart, even your physical being, sickness, poverty, perversion, all these things are eradicated and eliminated as this life, this heavenly treasure of the mind of Christ, through life abundantly, is made manifest within your mortal genes. And so then it is swallowing you up to bring you to the change and the glory of that other world. And Satan runs from light. He's a shadow. When the sun comes, watch the sun come over the horizon and watch the shadows it runs from it, trying to get away from it. See, and so then that means that with the brightness of your coming as Christ within you, as to being the light of the world, so letting your light shine, that is your understanding, is your light. Your light breaking the shadows, eradicating, doing away with the stronghold of Satan, casting down imagination. And every high thing is to the understanding and knowledge of the world that exalted itself against the knowledge of God. And so with this brightness of light, the world flees away. For the Bible said, even at the coming of God, the great light, after the millennium, to the Jewish people, to those that are still in the natural, that will be us coming. It will be God coming. It will be the great light in its brilliance to bring in the celestial world of the great new world. The time of the circumcision, the moving of the veil, the eighth day are the great, wonderful dedication of that which is forever to God. See, in the coming of this, the earth will flee away. The heavens will flee away. The ocean, the sea will flee away. All human beings will flee away. The mountains will flee away. There'll be nothing left. See, and that's what's already happening to you and I. As this great light comes to us individually, it's already happening because that's Calvary. And ye are the people upon whom the ends of the world have come. The fullness of time, the ends of the world have come upon you. And it is upon the Jews at the end of the millennium. Well, we're going to stop right there and go back and pick up a little something here to see if we can at least get in a thought or two about the world, because I can tell already we've gone about as far as you're going to go. So let's look at this. I told you that there is a difference between time and worlds. And speaking principally of worlds now, let's just examine something for a few minutes to see if we're on trail, if this is right, if Brother Pike is just guessing, if he's saying something, if something really is happening. Is there an accuracy as to what is being said, or is it Brother Pike speaking, or is it God speaking as the Bible said, and that to you and I, because we are his subjects, we are his children? And is it given unto us to know the mysteries and not given unto them out there, and they're only within the radius of the veil? And that is their intellectual achievement as to a conviction to think that we're beside ourselves. They said, Paul, you're beside yourself. Are we really eating in the hidden manner? Are we the fathers in the gospel to bring forth another world, another era? Well, let's examine it just in a natural side of things. So we know that we are the people upon whom the ends of the world have come. Let's look and see. First of all, Peter made the statement. He said, and the old world passed away. The old world. Evidently, there was a world. Evidently, there was a world. And this world passed away. He said it passed away with the flood. It passed away with the flood. Now, this gives us some means of understanding to go on here as to some natural stabilization, as to a formula, something that we can naturally work with. And the old world passed away with a flood. So then we know that there was a world. Then the thing that we notice is that there was exactly 2,000 years to that world. 2,000 years, and it was a world. 2,000 years, and it was a world. And all of a sudden, that world passed away with water. So we could really go into the depths of some revelation and things that would take all night long just on this little thought or two here. So we know that was a world, but he didn't stop there. Then he sums it up to Calvary. And he said, ye are the people upon whom the ends of the world have come. So then we look at it once again and we realize that there has been another 2,000 years that has lapsed. So this really stirs up our curiosity as to say, no, wait, if that was 2,000 years and the world passed away, and now here he is again seeing the world, the ends of the world have come, and it's another 2,000 years. Does that can't be coincidental? Something must be going on. 2,000 years. Because we look and see that there is yet 2,000 more years over to our day, or as to the end of it would be the 7 years, it could be the tribulation period. And here we are finding scientists making the statement that at the end of the 2,000 years that the world is going to flip upright, which I've never heard them say before. This has just recently come out on television. One of our people saw it. So then we know that that's the change of another world. See, because there's a world that's hid somewhere, lost Atlantis, as we say, there's a world hidden somewhere as to the tilt. You know, people get into their wild imagination. They come up with this lost Atlantis and whatever, like we liken to Atlanta, Georgia. How that Atlanta would loom out and how this thing would come out as to Atlanta, Atlantis, of what it had to do with, and sure enough, it will. They get these wild notions and they don't know how to explain it except through their natural expressions. Well, then we know that there is another world. There's a world of 2,000 years. You have the people upon whom the ends of the world have come. And sure enough, out goes the Jewish people. And they're cut off. And immediately, 7 years breaks away from a prophetical utterance of 490 years, and it just stops. And sure enough, here comes another world. And what kind of world is it? We know that when that world ended, it ended with blood. It was a bloodbath, and it's been nothing but blood ever since. So then, as the whole world was covered with water, so then was the whole physical world, in that Jesus was the entirety of all things physical as to the fullness of God. And he was bathed in blood, and he'll return as a vesture dipped in blood, and all humanity there passed away. All blood life passed away. And the only way that he could preserve it was to put the blood on the seat of atonement as his own blood, has a new life in a new blood, as to that of a quickening spirit, to give the radius of grace and bring in a heavenly span, which is another world. And sure enough, there it was. The world had passed away. And then a new world came in. And that's why God allowed them to come over to America, discover this, and call it the new world. And that is to the old world, to let us know symbolically what was going on. Now then, if from that on over to our time has been another world, and this world has been a heaven, now we know then that the first world passed away. It passed away. And now we're looking at a second. We're looking at a second world. Because though the first world passed away in 2,000 years, and the second world passed away in 2,000 years, now the third world is to pass away in 2,000 years. That's why I say, as Peter did to them, I say to you, you're the people upon whom the world come. See, and if it's going to pass away, then when all three worlds pass away, and the Bible speaks of worlds plural, worlds without end, and if all three worlds have passed away, all of a sudden we see when we sum it up, it still was but one world that passed away. And yet we know it was three worlds that passed away. And so then when we look back and say as to the second part of this, as to the mass of humanity passing away as to the blood world, then we know that that world suddenly extended as to be 4,000 years and the world passed away. So it took the two as to the first, put it in with the two of the second, and then a 4,000 year span. Oh, the world was gone. So the next part was 2,000 years. And so then we know the first had passed away as to the 4,000 years. And we move from that era of the Jews that extended all the way over to Calvary, in that the water world comes to Noah, and from Noah comes the blood world all the way over to Calvary. And if the water message of the water covenant that produces life, as to say, Adam and Eve, and your meat shall be these fruits, as to water life, if that was broken, if that was lost, and would not do as a covering when they tried to cover themselves with the leaves, then that meant that they fell to another era, and that is to put skins on. Well, it would take too long to get into this, and I'd have to have a drive to scream at you to keep your attention, unless I got started right when you first come in here when you're fresh. And I'm not trying to extend this. As you may think, there's just so many thousands of things to be said. I'm just trying to crowd a few things in just to get you some kind of formulated understanding of what's taking place, or that day's going to come upon you unaware. Paul said, I'm a preacher and a teacher, and I'm just trying to teach you a little bit tonight. So then we know that that 2,000 years passed away. Now then, we are within 7 years of the ending of another 2,000 years. And we know that this world is going to pass away. It's got to pass away. Because the Bible said, John said, I saw a new heaven and a new earth. And when the earth passed away, or the world passed away, it's to one dimension. That was one thing. And then when it went to another level and it passed away, as were the Jewish people, those were religious people. That was another plateau of life. And now we've climbed to another place, and this is another plateau of life as to this dimensional unfolding, as to man falling all the way down to here and being brought back to his originality. So then we know that this is on the verge of passing away. Now, if within 7 years another 2,000 years is going to be finished, then this world is going to pass away. Now, if within this 2,000 years it is different from the other 2,000 years to this extent that there's 7 years deleted that has to be taken from this 2,000 years, and that the church is not going to move to the full extent of this 2,000 years before the change, that there's going to be 7 years deleted, and that this 7 years being taken away, really, it's proper to do that. Because this era of time that came in, and yet it's not time as to what is a heavenly thing. When this era came in, then 7 years had been separated from the 490, leaving 483. And the 7 years has to go back to the 483 somewhere. So instead of ending the 2,000 years, which would end the world, God has to crowd in there somewhere, as we would use the terms, the 7 years to finish everything within the radius of the 2,000 to make a complete end of another world. So we understand that by this, the church must go out 7 years prior to the ending of the 2,000 years, when the world will be turned upright to bring in the millennium. As to the grounds of fertility, and a lot of things we've said about that, and a lot of things we could say about that. So then we know for sure that being in 93, that this is the last year. Now let's look at it like this. Is this the last year? Someone would say, well, then you mean this is the last year, Brother Pike, and then the world's going to be at an end. I told you, it's not like that. It's 2,000 years before the world ends. Will we see the end of the 2,000 years? Of course we will. But will we see it in an earthly perspective? Of course not. We're not earthly. We don't even come into view until the 7 is taken from the 490 at the point of 483. And then we're born again. And then the promises come, which would take hundreds of things expression to explain as to the time of the promise drawing near. And there we just come into view. Now then, coming into view as a heavenly creature for this 2,000 years in heaven, do we go back into the earthly perspective? No, that's why I explained a little bit before I said this concerning John seeing the war in heaven. Where did the child go to? It went up higher into heaven, which means we are moving out of the grace realm of the tutoring, of the protection where all human bodies are together. We're moving out of that now. We're coming out from among them because that heaven is now over. It's coming to a close. But we are moving into the third mind as to the revelation, as to the third heaven. Paul, the great revelator, moving into the mind of Christ. Not Paul living, but Christ. And so then in this tutoring, the revelation of Jesus Christ that was given to Christ, and Christ, not Paul, in the midst of the candlesticks, Christ in our heart, this mind, this understanding. And so then now we're coming over to this place. So we know then that the church goes out 7 years before the ending of this era. Or this thing as to call the grace spirit. We're the light of the world, the church. We go out this year, 93. Look what has happened to your government. Didn't I say the lady's gone? Revelation, what happened to the lady? It caused the church, the elect lady, and even the Jews are the same as to the church in the wilderness. The woman on the moon, and it would take lots and lots to explain that. But where did the woman go to? This woman that's come in now, becoming one with her husband, as it is supposed to be with Christ to sit upon the throne. Now, he says, I want the reference to my wife and I as the president. We're both the president. So, this is obvious as to the church again in between. See, and going back to Eleanor and Franklin Roosevelt, lots would have to be said right there. I just wish you had the patience. I had the time and you had the time, and God certainly takes the time to go into the thousands of things. We know then of a certainty, and I'm keeping you just a little long tonight, but I'm going to quit in just a few minutes. I just want to cover just a little bit of this. I'll never get it in. So, we know of a certainty. This is 93. Look at the mess. The woman's gone now. I fought the fight. A good fight. I've kept the faith. The whirly-bird, and up he goes. By Maryland is to the birth, and down to Houston is to the Jordan where the stones are and the crossing. Has to show that the carnal mind is conquered. That the child has been caught up. And we could just go on about Samaria and other things that are symbolic. Even if somebody said Christopher, one of our leaders over in Israel at this time, making conference with the new man that come in over there. As to Christ, we would say. Christopher followed that, and Christopher Columbus, when he discovered the New World, as to the symbolics. If I get into that, you know, it take too much time, it just bog you down. So then, we know that this is the last year. Something has happened. Where did the lady go? We know that this was a new world. We know that this woman was called a woman's world. We know America's called the woman. Where is the lady? It said, and the child was caught up. She was standing on the moon. America, the footprints on the moon magnified at this time. And the stars above her head caught up among the stars. Caught up among the stars. America, her flag, caught up among the stars. And we know it said she was clothed with the sun. And we know that on the moon, that's where it picks up the reflection of the sun. And there it was. And we could detail it a little more to bring it out as to Calvary and other things. And it would be so clear. So the foolish and abased things of the world to confound the wise as to the intellectual. For it's hid these things in the mind of simplicity from the world. And it's intellectual as to the greed of the human senses, which is but for a moment, and then you're thrown into the grave for the worms to eat because you didn't get these things. And even some of you that's only reflecting, still not getting them, for you'll not see as to the eyes of your understanding being enlightened to comprehend heights, depths, width, and length. You'll not see this thing when good comes because you're still in that intellectual darkness. So we know then this is the last year. Last year before what? Before the seven sets in. Now in this last year, if it is the last year before the seven sets in, is that Brother Pike saying that? It is true that God is saying that as through me as a minister. But then on the other hand, is it just I that is saying that? Or does the calendar itself show that we are coming to the end of 2,000 years? And is it a proven fact that there is 7 years of tribulation? Can you deny that? That at the end of the world, there's 7 years of tribulation? And that the 7 years has to be an earthly perspective of finishing this era to be tied to the 483 to finish the 490 years upon the Jews? Because they have to remain within the graced era of that church age to the extent that if they don't, then the blood taken off of the seat of atonement, they will be gone. So God allows through the grace of that, this little discovering of the Ark of the Covenant for that twilight season. The woman after the birth goes into the twilight. And she remains there until her purification is over. So times time and a half a time. And the woman flees into the wilderness because the child is caught up to the throne in the middle of the week. And a lot would have to be said there. So then we realize that with this, great is the mystery of godliness, and I'm a steward of the mysteries, Paul said. So, if this is 93, then that means as to the church, it could very well be the ending of all of it, because the church has to go out. Now, I'm not going to be able to say lots of things I want to say. I'm not going to be able to deal with time tonight, just speculating a little bit on worlds. You know, the world is a strange thing. Like a little article was published, my wife was relating it to me tonight. 4.2 million tons of the mass is consumed every second. And it takes, as it was said, 140,000ths. They spoke of 140,000ths of it as to the mass would only be consumed within a period of 6 billion years at that rate of consummation. And yet it is considered to be one of the smallest stars in the Milky Way. So we see how great and mighty God is and how puny these little scholars are, such as Einstein and these people that feel they're so great because of a little intellectual diplomacy. That is, they're not even equal to a speck of the universe. But I said that to go on and say this is something I want to relate here. So we understand then that phenomenal things take place. Scientists have been so worried about the sun using up its potentials. And just look at that. They just thought it was going to run out in the next little bit and we're just going to be without any light. But here we are seeing over and over that it would brighten, and it would brighten even seven times as to show the church age, as to the message, as to revelating itself, as to this wonderful coming forth of the day star dawning within your heart to eradicate the shadows, to bring in the new world. Here it comes, seven times. The church age messengers, everything that one taught, down to another, and down to another, and down to another, as in the world of study, as to medicine and science compounding itself, as to another man and in him knowing both, and another man knowing all three, and another man knowing about all four. And here it is, as the church age messenger, at the last days, and the Bible said at the sounding of the last trump, lift up your voice like a trumpet. As to the sounding of the last trump, we should say a lot about that too. But anyway, sevenfold, and then all of a sudden the church goes away. The brightness of the light, like when we were baptizing and the image is gone, it goes away as to the day start took it away. Here we are at that point right now. And the hearts and minds of them at Little Bethlehem are swelling and swelling, swelling beyond the comprehension of Einstein and the greats of the world, to where Einstein would not be the equality of a baby in the presence of some of these people. And yet, the Bible said, few there be that find this. Not few there be that perform or to live it. Just lay that aside. It's not a matter of just a few being able to live and overcome the way we think of it. The Bible said, few there be that find this. They won't even discover it. They won't even find it. As Brother Branham said, it'll pass right through the church. And the church world won't even see it. It's passing through the Church of God. It's passing through the Jesus name people. It's passing through the Catholic, the Baptist, the Methodist. And where are they teaching these things? And yet they're teaching religion. It's on television. It's everywhere. Well, anyway. So then we know that something is happening. Something is happening. The end of the world is here. We know that the end of the world is here, and this time it is a spiritual siege as to a deluge that will swallow up the world with the spirit of burning and consummation of God, who is a consuming fire. So we know that the last era is here. We know that we're in the last year. Somebody would say, then you say that this year the Lord Jesus was come. I'm only telling you what the calendars say. The calendars show that we're down at the end. If we allow 7 years, as to an earthly perspective, to get that back to the 490 before this world goes out, that God might finish it with the earthly perspective coming into view, which it must be done if we're going to have redemption of the body and the redemption of the world. Because the Jews bring in the redemption of the body, because the body comes in through adoption as to redemption by law. It can't be born because it's already been born of Adam. It has to be changed. And that brought in as to an adoption. And that is the coming of the Jews, which means adoption by law, in that we're born again of the Spirit on the inside. So, this year is here. Someone says, then you're saying that this year is the end of the world. No. I told you that you was the people upon whom the ends of the world come, back at Calvary. We are not of that world. Though we be in this world in our human body, yet we're not of this world, because the human body has nothing to do with it. That's but dust. That's just a reflector. And you're only reflecting in your body the grace of God as to that heavenly light. So you that are the spiritual beings on the inside, as it was said of Peter, as long as I'm in this tabernacle, that is the man, that is the one, neither male nor female. That one is in the third heaven. The body is in the second heaven. But we who are the third one on the inside, that is not of this world. That is of the heavenly world. That child is in the third heaven. Paul was the head of that. That was Christ. We are the members of that body. We are in the third heaven. And it's only being revealed to us. We talk about the rapture. I tell you, there's a change coming, folks. And there's already a transformation of mind as to a change that you're missing. You're losing out on. The church world is completely missing it. That this thing started with Paul. And that it would take a while to explain to you who you are and where you are and what you're doing. And though I say these things fragmentally many times, you don't lay it to heart. You don't conceive of it. You don't get it. You don't understand it. So I say, you don't understand. But I'm saying that the calendar show that this is 93. 93. And if the church goes out 7 years before the ending of the third world end, or the ending of the 6,000 years that the calendar shows, then where does that put you in? Somebody would say, but Brother Pike, supposing that this year goes out and the next year comes in. So what? Supposing this year goes out and the next 10 years come in. Some would say, well, that would prove you was wrong. It wouldn't prove me wrong. I told you what the calendar said. And the calendar is not wrong as to the date. That's what it is. But if there is a change of time and season, and God run it 2 years or 5 years or 10 years or 1 year or 6 months or 6 days as to cause the people not to be prepared, it isn't going to catch the saints unaware. For this day shall not come upon you unaware. Ye shall know when it's nigh even at the door. I say it's at the door. The world, it will come upon them as that of unawareness. All upon them that dwell upon the earth. So we don't dwell on the earth. We're not in the earth. We're caught up. We're hid with Christ in God. We live in another world. Our world will never pass away. Our heaven will never pass away. When the heaven of Revelation passes away, as to Revelation 12, that's the second heaven that shall pass away, to reveal the third heaven. For we look for new heavens, wherein dwelleth righteousness. So then the third world is on the verge of passing away. If it goes beyond this year, doesn't make any difference. God has offset it somewhere to catch the world off guard. But if it does come to pass this year, then that means that we're right there at it right now. Whether it does or don't, we're still down at the end time. And the revelation is precise, right to the very jot and tittle. And everything's just right. And the ending of this year, it brings in the beginning of the last 7 years. And if it should be the time of the tribulation, then that means 7 years from the time of this next year coming in, over to the end of 7 years, we'll bring in the millennium. A millennium being 1,000 years. Earth coming upright, as scientists say, that this will happen within the 2,000 years. At the end of it, according to the calendar, no matter whether we want to think this is the last year, or whether this 7 years is the last 7 years, as to Daniel's last week, as to the tribulation period, whether we want to believe it or not, scientists are already saying at the end of the calendar year of this coming 7,000 years, the world is going to swing upright. Folks, if that happens, then there's no doubt about that being the millennium. No doubt about it, because we said that's what would happen at the end. So then I just said that to bring a little more confirmation, as to stir you up to where you would suddenly realize that this is not a game that we're playing, and that these things are not some kind of guessing thing that we're putting together just to stir you up to keep you coming to Little Bethlehem. Because coming to Little Bethlehem isn't going to save you. And this is something to bring you, to snap you to attention, to let you know that if you rely upon your education and your sources that are in the natural, you're still down at the end if they are accurate. And they're saying things lots of time that are accurate. Just like the doctors say, you've got terminal cancer, you've got 7 days, and that's it. And it usually falls within the radius of that unless there's a miracle. So then I said all of that, and I still have something I need to say here. I'm going to end my little exhortation there. When I went home on a Wednesday night, this might be of no interest to you, and if it isn't, you're welcome to leave, because I've kept you a little longer than I intended to keep you. You're welcome to leave. I won't feel bad at you, nor will I try to embarrass you, because I finished with my little sermonette tonight. And this is only to them that are interested, and I'm only relating this because some of the ladies speaking to the menfolk, they're questioning the menfolk, and the menfolk have said to them that maybe Brother Pike might mention this tonight. I thought perhaps I'd mention it. Now, not to try to detail or explain it, because I tell you, before I mention this, I can't detail it. I can't explain it, because I don't even understand it myself. It's not been made known to me as to understand it. But when I went home on a Wednesday night, I told Betty this. I said, Betty, the ending of the mistress is falling around. The end of the world is here. And of course, Betty has confidence in what I say, and she believes it. And evidently, the calendar's falling in line. If you don't have any confidence in what I'm saying, at least, scientifically speaking, it's enough to arouse you, even if it doesn't happen the way science say it's going to happen. So that night, I went pray, which is my usual routine. And of course, Betty's usual routine is she'll fuss with me because I won't lay down for a while or stay in there. And I could tell her, I said, I just don't understand how I can do it, Betty. As Paul said in his day, no one concerned about the things of God except Timothy, which he called a son of the gospel. So then I went to pray, which was my usual routine. And as I began to try to talk to God, restless, coughing a little bit, and I got kind of restless. And I thought, well, I'm going to get up. I'm going to go over here in the corner, and I'm going to sit down in my chair over here. Because sometimes I do that, and the Lord will give me a visitation. And sometimes he wants me up to do that. And so I eased up, and I went over to the chair. You know, I asked Ben but a very little bit ago that God came to me in a very strange manner and visited with me. And it was very strange. It hasn't been that far back before I saw this thing, and I remember it jumped up from my Danny that the Lord said called Lobo. And then in that same room where he run to my praying chair, hasn't been that far back when I was in there talking to God, and something, I don't know what it was, ran by me, and it was in the dark, and it had a human form I could make out, and it had like bald eyes, like bulging eyes, glassy eyes, and it ran by me real quickly, and I didn't understand it. I still don't understand it. But anyway, I was praying, And I suppose that it must have been about 12 o'clock. And the reason I say that, I tarried a few minutes after this experience, just sitting in the chair, not knowing whether it was proper to get up or not as to the Lord speaking to me. And then about 15 minutes following, I suppose it would be, I went into the kitchen and looked at the clock, and it was 15 after, because something said, check the clock. And it was 15 minutes after 12. So I suppose it must have happened almost precisely at midnight, at the midnight hour. But anyway, I got up from my chair, from my praying, and I went over. I sat down in the chair, and I was sitting there. And while I was sitting there, Betty having over here to my left from where my chair sits, my chair sitting in the corner kind of looking out in the room, and against the wall on the left, she has a whatnot, whatever you call them things, I don't know. But it's the thing that you put little whatnots in, I guess it would be. China cabinet, maybe that's what they call them. But anyway, it's real beautiful, and somebody bought it for Betty. And different ones, they bring little old things, and Betty puts them in there. And it's just so beautiful, little things that she gets. At one time, she had a little crystal chariot and crystal horses in there. And up on the top is the shofar, and up on the top is the candlestick, the seven candlesticks. So I was sitting there, and I was talking to the Lord, and I was saying like this, Lord, visit with me and talk with me. And I know that you are above me. I know that you're in me. I know that you are through me. And oh Lord, I realize all I have to do is get in the mind of Christ. Even as John in the Spirit on the Lord's Day, as coming to the church and getting into the mind of Christ, you're in that word of Spirit and life, because God is a Spirit. And I said, help me to stir up my pure mind as to the mind of Christ, and help me to have faith so that I can enter into the Spirit and here he can visit with me in this heavenly place. Because that's where you're at, folks. If you take a lot of explaining. I always say it takes a lot of explaining. I don't know of any other expression, because it just takes so much to try to tell you, and yet I don't have time to detail it. So I said, Lord, visit with me and talk with me. Well, about the same time, I'd look over every once in a while over here toward the little china cabinet. And just beyond that in the window, I have an air conditioner. It's protruding on the outside. And when the rainfall comes, I can sit in that chair, and I enjoy it hearing the rain. I enjoy trying to pray. I used to enjoy trying to sleep in the rain. Especially when I was a boy and we had on tin top. I have this air conditioner. The rain comes down upon it. And I listen to it. The harder the rain comes, the louder it gets. And I'll sit there in my chair sometimes and talk with the Lord. While I was looking around the room, talking to the Lord, all of a sudden, it was as though something started passing before me. And I really didn't see anything, and yet I did. It was kind of like in my mind, and it's like it was sectional as something began to pass before me, and it seemed like it had a sacred atmosphere about it, or meaning that I found myself in my spirit wanting to just pour out my soul and say, yes, that's right, I believe it, oh yes. Like I didn't want to disturb anything or come against it whatsoever, because it seemed like it was sacred, and I really fear God. But anyway, this passed on by as just two or three things that happened, and it continued, and then all of a sudden, it wasn't there. Whereas it wasn't there to start with, I don't guess, but as I saw it, whatever it was, and then it suddenly wasn't there. And then something began to make a clang, and it would clang, clang, clang. And I thought, well, what in the world is this? Because I was sitting there in my chair in my room, and I thought, there ain't nothing in here to make that kind of noise. Then I thought, well, I know what that is. That's the air conditioner, the rain. It's raining. Then I thought, no, that couldn't be, because the rain coming down on the air conditioner has a dull thud to it. And I thought, because of the paint on the metal. And I thought, that couldn't be the rain. I said, besides that, it isn't raining. So the clang clang was like mother with a pie pan, you know, standing in the kitchen. She's got supper ready. She wants the kids, and she's got a spoon, and she's beating on it. But it sounded like a half a dozen or a dozen pie pans. As a matter of fact, somebody later said something about a tambourine like they used to beat. You know, they'd get a minstrel to beat the tambourine before they'd prophesy to create the atmosphere of faith and of something that was religious so that they wouldn't prophesy in Baal, that is to say in the flesh or in the carnal mind. A lot of people do that today. You know, they wait for the music starts moving, and then, of course, evil spirits, they vanish because people's spirit goes into that music, and then the faith begins to, and you know, as it was in the days of Saul when David played upon his harp and the evil spirit left. Anyway, I hear the clang, 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 and I thought, my dear God, what in the world is this? It wasn't terrifying. It wasn't confusing, but it was awesome. I'm sitting in my room. I thought, no, squirrels don't do that. I hear squirrels once in a while running up in the house making a noise. But I thought, no, squirrels couldn't do that. And then I turned, and it appeared it was coming from the era of the air conditioner, right down along the base of the little china cabinet, up here on the top where the shofar is, the candlestick and whatever. I thought, I just don't understand this. And then all of a sudden it got louder and louder. I mean, it got real loud. And then it really was awesome because I thought, here in my room, this just can't be. And then about the time that I would have got disturbed over to what, but it was beginning to move me. All of a sudden, I heard a voice, and the voice was coming out from where the pans was making the noise. And it was so low-keyed, I couldn't understand it. And it was talking, but I knew it was a man's voice. And it kept speaking like it was coming from the distance and approaching me right toward the base of that little china cabinet. And I listened, and I thought, my God, this is a voice speaking to me, an audible voice speaking out in my room. And as it got louder, the voice got louder, and the pans began to subside in the sound and the clanging, and it got louder. And the pans had been as so like, you know, beating a drum saying, and he's coming, and he's coming, and behold, he's here, as to an old primitive sort of a way of introduction, because it seemed like it had an ancient sort of an environment as to what I was moving into. And the voice got louder and it got louder. And as it got louder, then I began to understand what it was saying. To say I really understood it clear and distinguished the words exactly right, I'm not sure about one or two of them. But the voice said this. It says, have you considered Sternberg? Or it could have been Steinberg. I don't know. I wasn't sure about that one little thing. But I just said Sternberg. So I thought, my, what in the world does that mean? Because the voice was so forceful. It was so clear. It was like a man perhaps in his 40s that was in good health and speaking with all clarity and strength, with a peace, an exceeding peace, just something so peaceful and a common sort of a person. And gentle and tender and very positive. I could tell the whole thing was strictly in the affirmative. Nothing negative about it. And when he said that, I thought, well, what is this? I thought, my God, you're speaking to me like you did the prophets of old. This is a voice. This is an audible voice here in my room speaking to me. And then he continued on real clear. I understood him real clear. And the best I can remember the words sometimes after a vision or sometimes after hearing something or whatever it would be, sometimes I can't remember the words exactly. But he said, remain where you are. A little later on, I want to speak to you about something. And then all of a sudden, the voice went away. Well, immediately as the voice subsided and went away, another voice began to speak. And it was a woman's voice. And the woman, her voice was so tender, like that of a dove. And it was so virtuous and so pure. And it was the same as it was with him, like a strong, healthy body. And the strong, healthy body of this person, you know, it expressed itself with such clarity. And it was very tender. And the whole setting of it, as to the setting of the other, was like an angelic, like angelic beings. And yet there were human beings. And even as the man, it come into my mind as he was talking, like I could just picture him in my mind. As she talked, it was so low-keyed, I didn't understand it either. And it was as though it was back in the ancient times, though there was no clanging with it. And as the woman spake, being so low-keyed, I couldn't understand it, but she continually talked, like the man did, until finally her voice swelled up to a place to where I could clearly hear her. And she said something pertaining to, like, to the Romans, like it was a dramatic thing as in her day, and something was happening like as to the apostles or a crucifixion or whatever it was, I couldn't tell. It wasn't anything frightening or confusing, but all I could understand was her reference as to, like, to Roman. And then the voice went away. Well, there I was back to my normal self, as I say. I was sitting there so baffled. I said, God, this actually happened to me here in my room. And with that, all of a sudden, it was like I come out of a maze. It was like I'd been in a maze. It's kind of like that. And then I thought, God, I've been in a trance. I've been in a trance. You know, you go into a vision like in Florida, Betty and I, being tired, being on the field. And that day I was working on a little chart. We had us a little old rented house there in Florida, right on the border of Miami and Hialeah. And I'd just seen that vision over in Hialeah where we'd live. The thing about Brother Branham and predicted his death there in the year 66. Well, anyway, I was there like on the borderline here. And I got up weary from working on this little chart. And I went in there and I laid down. And Betty and I was getting a little rest in this house with our two or three children. And I lay down and I told you that I knew where I was at. I knew where I left from. I knew what I was doing. I knew I went into the room. I knew I lay down. And when I lay down, as I would say, I lay like this with my head up this way, my feet down this way, and I was looking in this direction. And while I was laying there on my bed, on the edge of my bed, on this side of the bed, the door being over here, as I come through like this and went over here and lay down on my bed, then all of a sudden it was like something exploded in my head, and I was like I was paralyzed all over. Not paralyzed as to a pain or a misery, but like I had no use of my body. It was completely gone, except I could think real clear. And everything become dark, dark, dark. All of a sudden, laying there, I felt the presence of somebody come into the room. And you remember, as you come in, I said I knew it was the Lord Jesus, though I couldn't see him. And when he come over to my bed, I told you, he come, he picked up my left hand, and he spoke to me, and he said, "Where is the stone of thy birth?" Real clear, just like this other voice. Though this other voice with the clang of the pan, it wasn't the voice of Jesus, though I know it's always the voice of God, but it was more like a voice of a prophet, a voice of like a man, like John when he communicated with the prophets over there when he was caught up. But anyway, he said, "Where's the stone of thy birth?" And all I could do was say, "I don't know. I don't know." He laid my hand down and he said, "I shall get thee one." And it was as though he quickly went out and come back in. The hand up, put a ring on this finger, which I believe to be there today. And he said, "I'll never leave you, nor forsake you. But lo, I shall be with you in the time of trouble and in the time of need." And he's reminded me of that of everywhere I've ever went when I was in a severity. And it's really scripture because he says to you the same, "I'll never leave you nor forsake you. Lo, I shall be with you always, even until the end of the world." So that I knew must have been a trance, like Peter on the housetop fell into a trance, become very hungry. And as I do through in the night, I become real hungry, and I'll be sitting there, you know. And as it was with Balaam, when he said, I saw the Lord with my eyes open. I hope you'll forgive me for just keeping you a little bit long tonight, because I usually let you go before 9 o'clock, or probably no later than 9 or 5 or 10 after 9. But I just wanted to get across a thought or two tonight. So, that obviously was a trance. Well, immediately, I told you that immediately when this ring went on my finger, I don't know what happened. Because suddenly I was up on my feet. I was not looking in this direction. I was not laying down. I was not paralyzed. I was not helpless. I was looking in this direction, standing on my feet. And the whole area where I was filled with light. And I looked, and standing before me was the angel of the Lord. And I knew everything. I was fully in myself. And when I saw the angel of the Lord, I told you, he was tall. He was so much taller than I that if I was in the room, his head went through the roof, through the ceiling, because he was so tall. And he was a big man. And yet he was so beautifully proportioned as a man. And his hair looked like it was just kind of lengthy like. Not long, way down here like this, but kind of lengthy like. And it was kind of a chestnut, the best I remember, kind of a chestnut hair. And with that, in a long flowing garment. And I was standing there looking up at him like this. And you remember, I said it was as though he had something in his hand. He dropped it, simmered down like a leaf falling in the fall. I picked it up. I put it back in his hand. He kind of looked real pleasant like at me. Like he was real pleased with what I'd done. And immediately was gone. Now all I can say is that that was a vision. That the first part of that obviously was a trance. Because I was aware. I was fully aware of the room. Of my surroundings. Of where I was. Of what I was doing. And what I saw. Everything. And but in this last part at the chain, it had to be a vision, because I wasn't familiar with anything around me. And it appeared like I wasn't in a room. So I just said that to get over a thought concerning what happened on a Wednesday night. It's about 12 o'clock, the midnight hour. I would speak where you are. You don't know where he's coming at the midnight hour of the cock crowing. So there I was. And of course, even this acrylic has to do with being there. It comes from that area. And a lot of things that we could say about that. I didn't really understand the vision until a number of years after. But I said that to kind of clarify something on this other one. I obviously was in a trance. I definitely was not asleep. I obviously was in a trance. And this audible voice spoke to me. So as to what it means, I don't know. I do know this, that as these things sexually was passing before me, as whatever it would be, it seemed to have to do with that. And my mind went to Elijah for some reason when this thing was happening. And another thing, Brother James Isaac's face has been coming before me for days. And James is about 81, and of course Moses was about 80 when he started his ministry. And sometimes I say a little thing to James. I say, James, you must be getting started in your ministry. And James, of course, is healthy. The eyesight hasn't waxed dim with James. And the natural sources of his body seems to be fully intact. He's very agile. He come down like last night to talk with us. And somebody said, take the chair, James. No, he just folds his legs and down on the floor like a teenager. And no problem getting down or up. Well, anyway, I don't exactly know what that has to do with. James said that. His mother said when he was born, it was a light over his head. And he was relating some strange incidents to us about his life. And I do know the Lord preserved him for this hour. It has to do with something. And when I think of James, I think of it as in connection with that vision. I think of it like this, that the time of the promise drew nigh. And in Isaac shall the seed be called. And his name is James Isaac. And him being spared as to the eighth day, the circumcision, or as to the new coming in. And it was James that said, it hasn't been but a few months ago He was telling the brethren, he said, you know, I had a vision. And in this vision, I looked and said, a calendar came up before me. And it began to flip and flip and flip. And this was months ago now, he said this. Said, and I saw that thing flip to 93. And said it stopped. And everything began to go into a conglomeration of something and began to get dark. And it was like it went into chaos. And that was the end of it. It was no more. See, and here we are in 93. And look at the turmoil as to the government. And look at the thing, the way everything shows it is in the Revelation. See, so we know that something is taking place. And we had spoke about 93, remember? Way back there we spoke about some things that's come to pass in different stages of the calendar. Now, when this voice spoke to me and James's face being before me, then I thought, now Elijah, this has come to me about Elijah. And James reminds me of Moses and Elijah. You know, but I said, now, buddy, this is the end. And of course, just as quick as the end comes as to the mistress, then the church goes out like that, and Elijah the prophet comes. Immediately comes the great day of God's wrath. And we're not going to tarry to try to enlarge on that. But I thought, well, surely to God, Lord Elijah has come to speak to me. Now, I'm not saying that was Elijah speaking to me. I don't know who that was speaking to me. I know someone spoke to me, and I know it was a man. I know that woman spoke. See, and I'm not saying it was Elijah, neither do I know who he was, nor the woman. But I'm seeing that my mind was on this, and this was the thing that seemed to be approaching. And I said, well, surely to goodness, Elijah must have come and spoke to me. And what he wants to tell me, I don't know. What he wants to tell me later, maybe it's something that's come to pass. I thought, you know, like the Macedonian called Sternsberg, have you considered this place? Like in Germany, somebody had a vision. I had a great crusade in Germany. Somebody had a vision that I was in Russia over there, and God was blessing us in Russia. Somebody had a vision. We had a great, mighty crusade over in Korea, and I have just recently been invited to Russia. But anyway, and I have been invited over to Rome. To minister there. But anyway, as I was saying, I don't know who I was speaking to. I can't explain whatever it was, the trance, because I'm just as baffled as you would be, and maybe you're not as baffled as I am. Maybe you would know. But I do say, if the time of the promise drew near, and if there was Isaac the son, which was typical as to the son of the child being born, and if that was the end of the mistress and putting all these things together, and then behold, here is Elijah to turn the hearts of the children back to the fathers and the hearts of the fathers back to the children. After all, I said to Betty, there's one thing that we do remember, that Elijah is not dead. I said, it is not spiritualism. Elijah is not dead. And though they say Moses is dead, yet the Bible indicates it was a dispute over his body, and he was later found in glory with Jesus, who was not dead, and Elijah, who was not dead. And it was said that the angel rebuked Satan as to the body of Moses. So obviously death didn't claim the body. And those two prophets do come back. But it wasn't said, behold, I send you Elijah and Moses. It said, I send you Elijah. And if the end was, and if that was Elijah, then it is possible, I would think. And I say that at random as to whatever you think, because I don't know. But it seems reasonable to think it could be possible that if it was the time of the coming of Elijah, he could make communication or would make communication, or that one thing links with another, like they've got to have the ashes of the red heifer as to the Kalah Paradamah before they can link everything together to go on with what that of the Jews. And it's obvious that Elijah is to the Jews and to that era of that seven coming back in at the end of the church ages. And it is definite that the church age is coming to an end. We'd like to elaborate more and prove that. But the thing that was kind of astounding to me was when I said to Richard the Jew something of Elijah and of this name Sternberg, he said, well, that's Jewish. And of course then it registered German Jews, and he said, I had a friend, his name was Sternberg, Well, that throwed a little light on it as to Elijah the Jews, whatever Richard, king of all. And of course, we're going to stop now. But I don't know what it means. I don't understand it. Sometimes it has taken me a number of years before I even understood a vision. I would not think it would take that long for this, because we're at the end of the world. And it seems like something would have to fit together pretty quick if it is something that God is trying to tell me as through a prophet, if it's not Elijah. It undoubtedly some angelic being. I thought perhaps it can be a Macedonian call. You know, have you considered such and such? Let's sing a little closer two together. I will let you go. Pray about the situation. Pray about my situation. Sometimes Sister Betty, she doesn't really press on me. She don't like to leave the flock. But she wants to get me off a little bit to recuperate and to recover a little bit. And so, went off down in Cancun through the work of Brother John and some of the others. I was able to give out literature that was so refreshing to me. And of course, after I got back, there was a place that was a place prepared for me to go down to Florida on St. George Island. They made it the preparations. And I counseled out and wouldn't go, at least not for the moment. And I did need the refreshing and a little bit of recuperating. And on St. George Island, God has spoke to me in his supernatural approach. I've been there when the island was real primitive and there's hardly anybody on it. And the Lord spoke to me. And Betty and I have been there a time or two. And a refreshing, and this time when this come up, I didn't have anything to do with it whatsoever. But they made arrangements for that, and the lady, I think her name was Beth, she said, if Sister Betty, Brother Pike wants to come down, I own lots, or I'm in charge of a lot of realty on the island, and I'll put them off to the end of the island, just at the entrance of the park, where the house is kind of secluded, and as to the beach and whatever, if they take an ocean to go into the water. But I still didn't feel to go at that time. At this point of my life, at this time of my life, I don't know exactly what I'm going to do, because I have such a heavy burden and weight for all the world till I feel crushed. And I see so much lethargy on the home front. Though we have people that are making special efforts, and they're trying, and a lot of them have stood right beside me in the battle. They've really stood beside me. They've tried to help me. I had a vision where I had all my people over this fence. They had to get over this fence to safety, and I had all my people over this fence. But then I myself was not over the fence. I was still on the side of the battle, and I was shot full of holes. All over, I had little holes in me where they had shot me full of holes. And then I had the vision about the two hunters and the bear, as you remember. And I don't know whether it had to do with the prophet's water, the shadows was falling, and they were trying to get to the bear before the serpent struck the bear, as it was in the vision, and before the shadows come over the bear, because he was going to go wild when the serpent struck him, and the serpent was going to strike him as soon as the shadows fell. Which again, I say, earthly things being shadows, that 7 years coming back in. You know, and the two prophets do come back in, and that is an earthly perspective as to shadows going back to the 483 to finish the 490, determined as to a prophetical utterance upon the Jews, which of course is Daniel's people, that is to make an end. And at this point, if I happen to go off for a day or two, or if I stretch out a little more to get to somebody to preach like down in Mexico, whatever it might be. Springtime is setting in, and they've asked us to come to different places. I like for you to go with me when I go to places like they're wanting us up in Knoxville, and already some people up near the Virginia line is wanting to know when we're coming to Knoxville because they want to be in our services. And I like for you to go with me. I really enjoy you going with me when you do. But if I happen to go off for a day or two, don't be alarmed. Just pray for me. Work with me and let me do what I feel to do. And the Lord speaking to me, because I go in your behalf just like I go in my behalf. And it's in your behalf for me to stay in full strength to where I can minister to you or do whatever needs to be as to being the right kind of shepherd. And I feel fine. I feel fine. I feel fit. Though Satan constantly fights, he fights. It was like Paul. You're a chosen vessel, and I'm going to give you the revelation and show you what great things you're going to suffer for my name's sake to bear this to the Gentiles. And Paul was constantly in a conflict as to fight the devil. Whereas in general, the church itself, it's a continual warfare day and night. So, I'm not surprised that he fights me all the time. Physically, mentally, spiritually, financially, local brethren, relatives, brethren abroad, false brothers and sisters. All the time, he fights. But nevertheless, we thank God who always gives us the victory. For this is the victory that overcometh the world, even your faith. And he won't suffer you to be tempted above that you're able, but will with the temptation make a way of escape that you might be able to bear. So you pray for me. Whatever I do, you pray for me. The Bible said Jesus did always the things that please the Father. And that's what I want to do. I want to finish my course with joy. Let's sing a little course or two. He was wounded for my transgression. He was bruised for my iniquity. Surely he has borne all my sorrows forever, and by his stripes we are healed. Once again now, he was wounded for transgressions. I'm going to ask Brother Mark to come up and dismiss us if he will. While Mark's coming, sing this course with me, will you? Surely. Can you examine yourselves? See if you're in the faith? Right down at the end time. Right down at the end time. His stripes we. One more time now as Mark comes.